to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Kayla, and I'm here with my co-host.
Vengeance. That's me.
I'm the Kayla, and I am here with
the
my
co-host. Kayla. The Noah.
To talk about the Batman.
Or the Batman. Who's to say? Who knows?
I thought about opening with his monologue where he's like, the city streets are crowded for the holiday. But like modify
the podcast landscape is crowded for the
I didn't have time
Batman
to like modify
voice.
It for the podcast.
Yeah.
They think I'm hiding in the shadows. But I am the shadows.
Hiding in the waveforms. Wow.
But I am the waveforms.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
When that noise hits your ears, it's not just a call. It's a warning.
Oh, my God. It's a warning.
Podcasting is a tool. I don't know.
Keeping our own diary, maybe, you know?
Emo diary.
Emo Diary. So we're going to be talking about the Batman today. We're going to be doing some non-spoilers, some spoilers, all the good stuff. And at the end, we're going to give our top three Batman movies. So that's going to be fun. But first, as always, got to get into those question of the week answers, which the question was, what is your personal 2021 best picture? So that's any 2021 movie.
Sure.
Which some people that answered did not understand that, which I think we probably didn't word it very well, so it's not really their fault, but it's all good.
What?
All
you, answers you think are that they chose from our movies, or?
No, Dan, I'll just read his first.
His was Dune, right?
No, he said, hate to be boring, but I'm picking the current front runner, which is The Power of the Dog.
Oh.
So I think he thought that, like, of the best picture winners that we would pick. And then he said he would want Dune Part 2 to win, like Lord of the Rings won for Return of the King.
Oh, okay. That's
which
fair.
Makes,
like
which
a
makes
culmination
sense.
Of Dune. Yeah, a
right.
culmination of
maybe
Dune.
Maybe he did answer. Maybe he did understand the question. I just don't know. It sounds to me like he just thought we were talking about the best
picture.
No,
I think he probably understood it. I'm just surprised that he didn't say Dune. Like
right,
he wants
right.
Power of the Dog to win, and then he wants Dune 2 to win as a combination of Dune 1 and Dune 2.
I think that's what Bronco Henry would have wanted. So, yeah, I think that's probably best.
Bronco Henry and what's his name? Jason Momoa's character. Dakota, Idaho?
Duncan, Idaho. Did you say Dakota, Idaho?
I knew there was a state name in there.
D-Idaho.
Duncan was close. I mean, Dakota was
close.
Yeah,
it was. Dunkin' Donuts, Idaho. We also have Zach Smith Michaels saying West Side Story, which I could have guessed that one.
Yeah.
West Side Story is a great movie. Yeah. I love that movie. And then Mike came in with two options.
Ooh.
He said either Green Knight,
all
right, or Worst Person in the World, which
wow.
is very a good movie too.
Yep.
So some varied picks here. You know, we got some obvious, like some front runners, but also
yeah.
some more nicher ones.
And
yeah.
then Joe answered on Spotify, per use, and he said Jagged, directed by Allison Clayman, which I think is pretty like low-key.
Yeah, neither of us have seen that.
No, I think it's kind of an indie film. Came out in 2021
cool.
about
All right, I see that, yeah.
Alanis Morissette.
Ah, yes.
It's on HBO Max, but that I thought that was cool. A nice underdog indie pick, which we're all for.
I believe, let me check. Because is it a documentary or is it like a movie?
I believe it's a movie.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Like a biopic. And he said that he hasn't seen a lot of 2021 movies, but I think that it's good either way.
Okay, so it actually does look like it is a documentary.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't seen it, so.
And this is actually part of the Music Box series that The Ringer did, which is also like what the Woodstock 99 documentary that I really liked is a part of. So it was like in that camp. So maybe I'll watch it then, because I really like that documentary. So very cool. Very cool. But now let's get to what everyone came here for, which is vengeance. And we'll jump right in to the non-spoiler section. So if you haven't watched the movie yet, you can just listen to this carefree, this section. And we will give ample time for the spoilers. So if you haven't seen it yet, you can duck out real fast.
Yep.
But I have a little bit of a history here of this movie, because it's pretty crazy. A pretty wild history, wild ride that this movie took to get to where it is now.
Great. Let's hear it.
So it was originally supposed to be set in the DCEU, taking place after Batman versus Superman, with Ben Affleck directing, writing, producing, and starring.
Oh my goodness.
So that was the first form.
Look, Ben Affleck, fine guy, maybe, I don't know. He's good at writing, I think. But,
yeah.
But I think it was a major win that this did not happen.
Yeah. Well, this is basically a different movie. It was going to feature Deathstroke as the main villain, and that was actually set up in the Batman versus Superman post-credit scene. Have you seen that movie?
I have not.
It's like Lex Luthor, he's on a yacht, and it's like very green screen. It's a very bad
I saw scene. Man of Steel. Really, was that the first Superman?
Yeah. That was the first Superman. Yeah. And then Batman versus Superman was the sequel.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one. I didn't care.
Man. Yeah, I've seen it twice for some reason. The film's title was revealed in October 2016 and was set for a 2018 release, which is so funny because it's just the Batman. Like, you go to the title release, like, at Comic-Con or whatever, and it's like, the movie is called The Batman. And that's the announcement. Now, here's where we get some trouble going on.
Oh.
So in early 2017, Ben Affleck decided to step down as director due to issues with the script, and he just said he wouldn't enjoy directing it, but he was still going to do all the other three.
Star, write, and produce.
Yes. Matt Reeves was actually on the top of the short list for potential replacements, but when he read the script, he said he'd only do the movie if he could have full creative control.
Good call.
And Warner Brothers agreed to this, because I think the response to Batman versus Superman was obviously not great. So yeah, they were like, maybe what we're doing here is maybe not the best idea. And so he began to work on the script in March 2017, and he was originally going to keep it connected to the DCEU, but then he eventually like took it as a young Bruce Wayne narrative, which meant they would need a younger actor for the movie.
Yeah.
And then things got further complicated, at least for like people looking in on the outside, when Ben Affleck entered rehab in August 2018. And so that was like the unofficial confirmation that he would not be starring in the movie. In 2019, January, a new release date of June 25th, 2021 was set. And that was the official confirmation that Affleck would not be involved. And this is basically like a different movie than the DCEU. So the short list for Batman was Robert Pattinson, Nicholas Holt. Aaron Taylor Johnson, which is not bad.
Both of them, I think, would have worked. I see Nicholas Holt more as like a Nightwing or like Robin type than Batman. Like, he's not as emo brooding, but I could see him in this universe.
Right. And Aaron Taylor Johnson feels like the Netflix original movie version of Batman.
Yes.
So I think that maybe wasn't the right choice.
But sure, I guess.
And who do you think was the fourth on the short list?
Who else is in that group? I don't know. My brain is like blanking on me. I'm trying to think of, I don't know.
Starts with an A.
Andrew Garfield.
No. Good idea. Army Hammer.
Ooh.
Yuck. Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, that would have been that would have been awful.
Truly terrible. Truly like the worst outcome.
And also
outcome.
Like, he could not do this role at all. I'm not sorry to say it. Like, he just could not.
I saw an interesting tidbit that Robert Pattinson, he actually, for his audition, had to wear Val Kilmer's Batman Forever suit because it was the only one that they had that would fit him.
Because he's so tall?
I guess. I don't know. But apparently also I know that suit is really uncomfortable. So that kind of probably sucked for him. But it ended up working out and they announced his casting May 31st, 2019. I do remember this. The people were pretty not happy about this.
Yeah, I mean, that, I Batman was fans. Happy from the start. But no, I'm yeah, also not I think just a like, diehard Batman fan.
I think it was like the Snyder heads probably weren't happy. They made a change.org petition, of course, actually.
Because that does something.
Yes. But King Christian Bale voiced his support and told him to make the role his own and ignore critics. So amazing. Great advice. And then we had more cast members announced, which was a great time on Twitter when all those cast was announced. I remember that was kind of like Dune. When that cast was announced, it was like the same idea.
Yeah.
It was very similar vibes.
Yeah, I'm sure once it rolls back around in my time hop, I'll see me being like, probably, I would imagine if I could think of what I probably tweeted during that time, it was probably in all caps, Paul Dano!
And that's exactly what I tweeted after I watched the movie. No. Yeah, and then they began principal photography January 2020. Now, this might be the last time we have to give this update in the history section for a movie, but the production was delayed by the pandemic. Surprise.
Oh.
And they pushed the release to October 1st in April. So at this time, about 1/4 of the movie was shot, and I did see was pretty interesting that Matt Reeves did actually use his time to like edit and explore and like figure out the movie's tone.
Sure.
So that is pretty interesting. Like, so still being productive, you know, figuring out how to still work on the movie while they're not filming. Yeah. Filming resumed September 3rd, 2020. But then 3 days later, it was delayed again because Robert Pattinson tested positive for COVID.
Yes.
And so they had to quarantine for the full 2 weeks, which is a bummer. Yep. And I saw after that, for the rest of the production, Matt Reeves wore a mask, scuba goggles, and a head covering
wow.
on set to reduce chances. Because he was like, if I get this, then I don't know if this movie's even going to happen
sure,
anymore.
Sure, yeah. That's
so I respect
iconic
that.
King.
That is, yeah, the COVID sets are wild because like Adam McKay was like, not even on set when he was like directing remotely the whole time. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting to see how sets dealt with the pandemic, like while filming in 2020.
Yeah.
They had the crew live in close area to the production. They couldn't like leave the bubble.
Yeah.
They used earpieces and remote control cameras. So pretty intense stuff. And they pushed the release to March 4th. And then filming wrapped March 12th. So it's like they had a year after filming was finished. The first test screening was 4 hours long.
Wow.
But it still received positive reactions, which is like, I think he said was a big deal for him.
Give us the 4 hour cut. Where is the 4 hour cut?
We need to make a change.org petition.
For that,
I think.
Yeah. Where's those Snyder heads when you need them? Release the Reeves cut.
It's actually the longest Batman film and the third longest superhero film after Justice League and Endgame. So still, it's 176, so pretty long. And this is one other interesting thing I found, which I know a lot of people were really mad, like, oh my gosh, it got censored down to a PG-13 rating. But he said that he always intended to make it PG-13 because it was like one of the only mandates that the studio had.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's a natural to assume like it was supposed to be R and they made him go in and cut it down.
Yeah, because it was also like so much talks about it being like dark and gritty and violent.
And Joker and Suicide Squad were both R, you know? So it seemed like that was maybe what they were doing. And Birds of Prey, I think.
Yes.
So like DC was kind of going in that direction, it felt like.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. And I know people were mad. They were like, what? Where's the R rating? And I was like, I don't know. I'm fine with this. I don't have any stakes in it.
They did waste their one F word, though. That was like...
I don't
even
remember where they used it.
It was just in like right in the beginning by like... one of the cops. I don't remember exactly what it was. It was just a waste.
Yeah,
it was very unmemorable.
I don't remember that. They should have let Riddler use it.
That would have been so funny. So box office, which is a great section. Early previews were 21.6 million on opening night, which is good. So then Friday, this is pretty much overperformed, like by a little bit, because Friday they got 57 million, Saturday 43, and then Sunday 28. And Saturday and Sunday are more projections, but they're basically confirmed at this point.
Yeah.
So that means opening weekend domestic was 128.5 million, which is pretty good. Spider-Man got, like, as comparison, it got 260, like, for another pandemic comparison. But Spider-Man was, again, like, pretty much an anomaly. Sure. And also, if you look at other March movies, it's number 5 in most, like, highest grossing March movie opening weekends.
Wow.
Behind Hunger Games, Captain Marvel, Batman versus Superman, and Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
So it did pretty good for, like, pandemic.
One thing Spider-Man, like, had going for it was that it's more appealable to children. Like, I know I've seen a lot of tweets of parents being like, is Batman okay to take my kids to see? Like, they want to see it. Like, I think Batman is kind of known as just being grittier and more, or less kid-friendly than Spider-Man is, so.
No, definitely. I mean, in the trailers were also darker, you know. But I think that is good that they did make it PG-13 then, because I think if it was R, it would have made, like, definitely under 100 million opening weekend.
I wonder if that mom that sat in front of us at Ghostbusters Afterlife let her husband take his kids to it.
I really hope so. I hope so. That would have been so funny. That was seriously one of the funniest times. Like, that was so
funny. Yeah, we saw Ghostbusters Afterlife and they played the Batman trailer, the mom in front of us was having one of those moments that was like, should my kids even be watching this trailer, and kept like looking at the dad and being like visibly bothered that her children were watching this trailer.
And it was like the Matrix trailer she did it with. It was like all the trailers like that had like
and her
a punch
kids were
them.
Like I would say they were maybe 8 and 9 and like maybe 11, like the youngest was probably 8 or 9 and the oldest was like maybe 11 or 12.
Yeah, the oldest was definitely fine. I think she was more concerned about, like, the 8 or 9 year old, which, you know, I get.
Yeah, it's
a little
dark.
Scary.
It's scary.
Probably, like, waking up and he's like, hi, how's it? He's like, my name is Vengeance today. That's probably what he did.
The kid gets up for bed. He's
I'm Vengeance.
I am the shadows.
He is Batman now. Cool. So before we get into our spoiler-free thoughts here, do you want to read the summary that I wrote up so we can kind of just get into it?
I would love to. Bruce Wayne has been moonlighting as the Dark Knight for 2 years now, taking down criminals with the help of Detective Jim Gordon. Despite his efforts, though, Gotham's crime rate has actually risen over the past 2 years, and now there's a new drug operation taking root, leaving Bruce to wonder if he's actually hurting the city instead of helping. When Gotham's mayor is brutally murdered by a new villain called the Riddler, Batman starts down a path of cryptic clues, one that leads directly to the black heart of Gotham.
Man.
Wow.
So that's the Batman. That's basically just like the first 10 minutes. Like, that's all pretty much set up very early on.
Yeah, that's all in the establishing. There's a lot of other stuff going on in the movie, obviously, for 3 hours.
No, right. It's not just this the entire 3 hours. So going into this movie, I was pretty excited. I mean, I'm a big Batman fan.
Yeah.
It was, I think, I don't know about you, but definitely, like, the Dark Knight movies were pretty, like, influential for me. Just because, you know, they're, like, they feel like, I think, when you watch them as a kid, like, one of the first, like, adult movies you see, you know?
I mean, they definitely were for me.
Right, yeah. And I think, like, that's always something that I'm going to have, you know? So I think, like, Batman always is going to feel exciting more than, like, Doctor Strange or, like, Captain Marvel. I don't know. Like, it just... And I think most people feel like that. Like, he's one of the main superheroes. Yeah. Like, Superman, Batman, Spider-Man are, like, very big. So I was very excited. I knew that the cast was great, that it was going to be, like, a little bit more of, like, a quote-unquote auteur take, kind of like they did with Joker. Like, it's a superhero, but now it's for the cool kids. But in the trailers look good. I actually, like, I watched all the trailers, but I specifically, like, didn't pay attention to the plot points of the trailers. So, like, I really didn't know much of what the plot was going in. I just knew it was going to be more detective based and it had a darker tone, you know? So, like, I didn't actually have many things going in that I knew were going to happen, I guess, besides like scenes, but I didn't know like what the main story was. So I was pretty excited going in. How about you? What was your, because you saw it a little later too, so you got to see some reactions.
Yeah, I tried to kind of not see a bunch of spoilers as best as I could. And, you know, it is what it is, but I saw that people really liked it.
Right.
Going in, I was excited for it. It wasn't like something I was mega looking forward to, but like I have been looking forward to this one for a while, and I love Robert Pattinson, and so I was very excited to see him in this role. I'm a big fan for many reasons. And with the trailer, I definitely, like, I vaguely remember watching the trailer. I remember seeing it in front of Ghostbusters. And really the only thing that I remembered from the trailer was the car sequence.
Yeah, that was, like, definitely a very big scene. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's the only thing I knew from the trailer. I had no idea what any of the plot of this movie was about. Going in, and I definitely was not looking forward to it being 3 hours, because when you add in previews, that's 3.5 hours that you're sitting in the theater, which is a very, very long time for me personally, and my theater does not have super comfortable seats, so I wasn't like 100% excited about that, but yeah, I was excited for the movie in general. Mm. I love Paul Dano, too, so I was very excited for that. And the Riddler, like, the Joker is fine, but at this point, I'm so tired of the Joker. Like,
no, yeah,
I just
definitely
do not need to see any more Joker renditions. And so I was very excited that Riddler, who in the old ones, you know, he wears that funky green suit.
Yeah. Or Jim Carrey, like, going wild.
Yeah, so I was excited about that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think the Riddler was definitely interesting because it's been a while since we've seen the Riddler in a Batman movie. And obviously, from the trailers, like, I mean, obviously, like I said, it was obviously a very darker tone, and the Riddler, like, looked completely different, you know? So it was almost kind of like we were getting a completely new villain, in my opinion. Because,
yeah,
like,
definitely,
even though there was established movies with him, he was, their take on him was obviously going to be very different. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So my experience with the movie was actually a little interesting because I saw it for the twice this weekend. I saw it first on Thursday night, opening night. And it wasn't like a great, it didn't line up great for me because Thursday is actually like a very busy day for me. School wise, I have 4 classes and I get up at 6 a.m. So I didn't really think that one through. and I had to go to like a senior recital right before for one of my friends. So it was like not great going in. I was like already kind of tired. And the people next to me were talking like throughout the movie. It was very annoying. And so I don't know, I think that all had a little bit of a effect obviously on my experience of it. And I felt like, I guess when I finished it, like I had all of the pieces of the puzzle, but I couldn't like figure out how they fit together.
Sure.
If that makes sense. So like I knew I had all the aspects, but it didn't all fit together in my mind. So I gave it like a 7 out of 10, I think, when I first saw it. And then on like throughout the weekend, I was like listening to interviews with them or like thinking about it more. And all of a sudden, like, I don't remember what it was, but the movie just clicked in my mind. Like the pieces fit together all of a sudden. It was like instantly. It was really weird how it worked. And then I was like, man, I need to see this again. And so I watched it again, today actually. And I loved it. Like, completely different experience of watching it. But I think like I needed that first time because it is like a lot to take in. And I don't even know if I was, because it is a pretty, there is a lot going on. And I don't know if I was like going into it with that mind of trying to like figure out what the movie was trying to say, even, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of times with superhero movies, I feel like sometimes I'm watching them with a different lens. Maybe that's Marvel. Like Marvel movies, I just watch it like more passively, I guess, because I know that there's not going to be much like subtext in there.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe too, the first time I was just watching it, like expecting more of an action movie and not as much of like a moody noir detective movie, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I went to my favorite, the AMC subtitled screenings.
Wow.
Because
they return.
I love the subtitle screenings. They're great. It helps me keep track of all the dialogue. And then there's usually not a lot of other people in them, so I don't have to worry about, like, a showing being packed. I saw this Saturday afternoon. There were a few other people, but not, like, a ton. There were a couple people that kind of talked in mine a little bit. There was, like, a couple kids up behind me. But I have more compassion for kids because, like, if a 10-year-old is saying something that he thinks is cool, I'm like, that's fine. He is having, like, a real-life moment here. But, like, there was a lady down below who, like, yelled something at some point, and I was like, all right, you're an adult. Like,
what are you doing?
Yeah, so, but it was fine. I just had a little seat to myself, and I had to go to the bathroom, like, I don't know, with, like, an hour left, and
the worst.
Well, and I should have, like, gotten up and gone then, because then it's, like, there's no time you can get up and go to the bathroom during the last, like, 45 minutes of the film, because every single thing is something that's important, and I was like, well, what am I gonna do? So, like, I just sat there and sat there and sat there, and it was, like, torture,
right.
But the movie was still good. So I had a really good experience. I really liked it. I thought it was really good. I was engaged pretty much the whole time. The only reason I even knew, like, what time it was, like, I wasn't looking at my watch, was because the guy in front of me had, like, a smartwatch on that he didn't
put. Oh, my gosh.
Because I put my Apple Watch on theater mode, so when I lift up my hand, it doesn't light up. But this dude had this really bright-ass watch, and he would stretch, and every time he would stretch, the big blue screen would light up, like, literally almost right in front of me. So I saw the time on his watch, so I knew how much time was going past. But it definitely, like, surprised me how quickly the 3 hours went by. I worry with stuff like that about pacing and, like, being able to stick with it and not get bored of certain sections in it. Like, usually you hit the midpoint and you're like, I'm kind of dragging and trying to hold out here. But I didn't feel that way at all. Like, I felt very engaged the whole time. I don't know that there was even a point that I kind of felt like it was getting slow. Like, I felt like the whole thing was super engaging. And, like, if I had had a chance to go see it again today, like, if I didn't have other stuff going on, I definitely would have gone back and watched it again.
Yeah, like, both times I watched it, I was completely engaged the whole time. And, like you said, a lot of times you'll have a couple moments in movies like that where you're kind of, like, fidgeting, or it's like, okay, I think I need the story to progress now to something new. But there was so much going on in this movie that there was always, every scene was, like, a new discovery or a new clue they were trying to track down or a new lead they had. So I think the fact that it was, like, a detective story, I think really benefited the movie.
Yeah.
Because you always had, like, a goal, I guess, you know? And it didn't feel like a fetch quest kind of goal, because it was always, like, towards the main plot. Like, it was just like they were tracking, like I said, tracking down a clue or investigating another lead. So I think that really did work, because it was able to segment different things together, and, like, it was always felt like it was progressing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the runtime, I think, was perfect. It definitely feels like he cut it down to just what he needed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I could not imagine this movie being shorter. Like, I don't know what they would even cut out. Like, there's nothing in it that I would have cut out at all. Like, it was just right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, every scene is obviously very intentional. And I've read a lot of interviews, like, a lot of the test screenings, you would cut out a scene and then put it back in. So it was obviously they were very concerned with making sure the runtime was right.
Yeah,
and so
perfect.
I think they did a great, it's like, I think for me, definitely Justice League and maybe even Endgame, like, could have had cuts in them. But this one, I could not think of a place that you could cut this movie. There is, like, one scene that people have been talking about, which I won't talk about because it's a spoiler scene. But even that scene, I wouldn't have cut.
Yeah, I don't even know what scene that is. I haven't seen that.
We'll talk about it in spoilers. Okay. But Yeah, I really good movie. Definitely maybe even exceeded my expectations, because like I was expecting it to be good.
It exceeded mine.
Like, it was really good.
I was expecting like a 3.5 or a 4, and I gave it a 4.5.
Yeah, I gave 4.5 too. It was, yeah. It's really good. I think one of the things, non-spoiler things, that really helps the movie is all the technical aspects of the movie.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of cool like cinematography. I read they did a lot of different lenses and a lot of different cameras for specific shots.
Yeah.
And it really just makes it feel very personal and not like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it was directed by like a company, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it doesn't feel, because I know, not to keep going back to Marvel, but a lot of times when you're watching these other superhero movies, you feel like you're watching a movie. Like, you're there and you're watching the shots and you know that you're watching a movie. But I felt like with this, the way that they brought you in with, like, the way the camera moved in a lot of those tight spaces, especially in, like, the mayor's house study and the Riddler's apartment and everything, like, it didn't feel like you were watching a movie. Like, it felt like you were there experiencing this with them, which is something that I don't know that I have experienced in a Marvel movie before. Like, it was so, it leaned so heavily into the atmosphere of Gotham and the atmosphere that surrounds the aura of, like, Bruce Wayne as Batman, that, like, his melancholy vibe where, like, it's raining and it's dark and all that, like, you really feel like you're soaking in this atmosphere, which was very cool to me, because I don't know that I've experienced that in a bigger blockbuster like this before.
Yeah, that was a great point. And it, like, I think that you can really tell all of the camera choices, the location choices, everything is very intentional for that, rather than just trying to get even like a shot that looks the coolest, because there are some shots where it's like, it's just very basic, but like, it's the shot that the scene needed. I think too, with the soaking into the atmosphere, like you were saying, the score is like that people have already pointed out, and it's like, it's so good. It's definitely going in already like a front runner for best score of the year for us.
Right now it's the only score.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there haven't been too many,
but I would guarantee that, for me personally, I mean, I can't speak for you, but I feel like you would feel the same. It would take a lot to beat this score out for me, because it's one that, like, it's not even one of those ones where you come back on it and you listen to it and you're like, wow, that score is really good. Like, when you're sitting there in the theater, you're thinking, holy shit, this score is incredible. And I thought it multiple times, because I also, one thing that really struck me about it is it's very orchestral, like classical. And that doesn't, I feel like that is not very common for a movie like this. Like, someone else would have scored this movie and have it be big, which it does get big in some areas. But I feel like a lot of the times it's more melodic than it is like actually trying to build up, if you know what I mean. Like, it's more enhancing rather than really like driving the action and stuff.
And the last, the Dark Knight trilogy did use strings, but it was a lot of synthesizers and electronic score. So I think this was like a really nice change from that. There's also some times where they have like a guitar in the background, like the car scene when he's walking and it's kind of like a Western vibe and it's like the guitars come in. Oh, man.
And I have listened to it since like yesterday. I listened to the whole thing and I've listened to it some today. And like each of the themes as well for each of the characters, like there's a Catwoman theme, a Batman theme, and Riddler theme. And they're so good. The whole thing is so good. And the last half of the score, I mean, the whole thing is good, but I just was like really blown away when I was listening to it, like with my AirPods in, lying in my bed. the last, like, I don't know, four or five songs, I just was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, next level.
Well, and because it gets like sweet when it needs to, too.
Yeah.
And like soft, like, because there's two specific scenes towards the end that are really like beautiful. And so it's not all just like, dun, 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 dun. Like some movies where it's just like, da, da, da. Like, it's
like, it's not just hammering away at it. Yeah, it really understands the tone of the movie. The score does. And I think a lot of times scores set the tone for the movie, and I don't think that this did that. I think it understood, and Michael understood exactly what the vision was for this movie. It understood all the emotional ups and downs and notes of this movie, and it understood the characters. And because he understood the movie tone, the score was able to emphasize the tone, which, like, he's an incredible composer, but...
Yeah, and I think it's one of his best scores in, like, years, because he's been leaning a lot more into, like... I mean, he's doing, like, five scores this year, and, like, just multiple scores a year, all very, like, temp track sounding, which is just, like, I mean, that's what composers do when they get more popular. They just take on more scores like that.
Yeah.
And so it just felt like he's kind of leaned more away from... like scores like Up and Inside Out, which are like very both really good scores. And like a lot of his earlier scores, I think, are really good. And so I'm really glad that this was like almost a return to form. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Because he's always been one of my favorite composers, but like I'm never going to sit down and listen to the Rogue One score. Like, what even is the Rogue One music? I don't know.
Yeah. And I liked the he did the Spider-Man score for No Way Home.
Right. He did.
And I did like that score, but this was like leagues better.
Right, and I don't remember the score at all. Like, it's probably good in the moment, but I don't remember anything about the score from Spider-Man personally. Like, it just is kind of like one of those things, like you said, where it just is there to, like, give you the tone of the
movie. Yeah, it's still good, but it's not amazing.
Right, it's a very different approach, I guess.
Yeah.
One thing, though, I will say that did not annoy me about the score, but it really stuck out. So, the main Batman theme everyone's been singing is like, dun... dun, 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 dun. Like, it's a theme that they played multiple times in the movie. But it's very similar to the opening of the Imperial March. And so I just heard the Imperial March the entire time. Because the Imperial March is dun, 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 dun. And so it just removes those last two notes. And so Imperial March is quarter note, quarter note, quarter note, the first three notes. And then this one is dotted quarter note, eighth note, quarter note. So it's like dun, 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 or dun, dun, dun. And then they both go down to a fifth, dun. Yeah, it's the same. It's the same four notes, just some of the rhythm has changed.
I definitely
thought that
when I watched it and when I listened to it. I always think, I keep thinking like Darth Vader, and
Imperial
then I'm like,
March.
Oh, it's Batman.
Right, like I keep waiting for the second half of the theme.
Yeah.
I'm like, last two notes, but it's still good. Like, it still really matches
the story.
And I don't think it was like, it doesn't feel like an intentional ripoff. If anything, maybe
an
homage kind of thing. Other non-spoilers, we can maybe go a little bit into the cast. I think this is a great ensemble.
Yeah, very, very good ensemble.
Beyond Robert Pattinson, who I think, it's hard because, like, without getting to spoilers, this is, like, only a certain side of Batman.
Yeah.
And so I think with more movies, he definitely will probably become my favorite Batman. At the moment, it's like, I need to just see a little bit more of him. Because it's unfair to compare him, for me, to Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Because Christian Bale, we see go through three different movies in so many different stages of his life. So this is like, it's just hard to compare it for me. But I think he definitely, like, if they make more movies in the series, I think he definitely will become my favorite. But there's, like, all around just a really great cast of characters who I think were all, like, really fit their parts.
Yeah, very much so. Everyone was, like, perfectly cast in this. Like, from the leading characters to the supporting characters. I think Pattinson and Zoe Kravitz, she was great. I thought she did, really, really well. I loved Paul Dano. Not just because I love Paul Dano, but, like, His performance was like, I mean, it just is so, we can talk about it in spoilers, but like, just the way he plays that role was like, he's not really scary, but he's scary. Like, Riddler to me is not a threatening character to me. Like, you don't see him as a threatening character, not like you see the Joker as threatening. But like,
yeah, right.
The way that he does the character, I'm like, this guy is terrifying. Like, he is the worst kind of person that, you know, could be having power and doing things.
And like, I think sometimes with Batman villains, because they don't always have like big powers or something, they can sometimes be come across as like just stupid. And like,
yeah,
this person like is just a regular person that like shot someone, and like they don't feel like a villain, I guess. But he really did a good job of like feeling like as a very specific person, very specific character, and that just like jumped off the screen.
I'll talk more about that in spoilers.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. I also want to shout out John Turturro, who had like such a good performance.
Wait, who did he play?
Falcone.
Okay. Yeah.
He is so good. Tons of Godfather vibes, obviously, they're playing on.
Yeah, his glasses that they gave him, the costuming was perfect. Like, they gave him those cool glasses, and he had the cool suits. Like, he looked like that kind of guy, you know, who you don't want to cross paths with. But, yeah, he was really good. Colin Farrell.
Penguin, Colin Farrell.
Yeah, he obviously, I mean, you don't even recognize him, but like.
No, I tried. I was like, I cannot see him.
Yeah,
I
but
can't.
He was so, so good. And then even like the guy who played Jim Gordon, whose name.
Oh, Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, Jeffrey Wright.
So good.
He was also incredible. And then all the like other random side characters, like. Some of the other police officers.
Yeah. Second time watching, I noticed like they definitely use a lot of very specific officers like that are like keep coming back, which is helpful than just having like a random guy you've never seen.
Yeah. So I just think everyone in this just really gave it their all and was really cast well. Props to the casting director who cast all these people, because it made the movie for sure.
I also think, I mean, it's so hard to follow up Michael Caine as Alfred. And I think, like, Andy Serkis took a really good approach with it, because, like, he plays him very differently.
Very different,
And I really liked it. Like, it really works for the movie.
He was so sweet. I love Alfred, and I just loved how, like, Alfred can be played in so many different ways. But I loved that his Alfred was just, I don't know, like, he was kind of more in the background. Like, he was more just kind of calm. Like, you could see the hand that he has in Bruce's life. But he kind of was just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to, like, help you do this, but I'm going to, like, not get in your way. Oh, yeah, I did. By the way, I did this. I solved this.
Yeah, by the way, I solved it for you.
By the way, I worked
Alfred
on this.
Is definitely a major podcast listener also, like when he's cleaning the house. This guy has podcasts on all the time.
But not like, but like good podcasts. Like he's
No, good podcasts.
Yeah, like he's listening to, you know, like history podcasts where it's like learning about things and
I feel like he'd also be like a maintenance phase listener. He seems like, you know, just like he's just in it for the knowledge rather than the entertainment.
Yeah, I love him. No, I loved how he played him. I loved how he just was very, like, calm, and you could tell he was the guiding force in Bruce's life, but wasn't, like, over the top with being like, Bruce, I love you. Like, you are like
you
a son
to
me. Like, I love that he didn't, which I don't think that this is necessarily spoilers, but I love that he wasn't, like, trying to be a father figure, like he, even
right,
though he is, like it felt like he just wanted to be a part of Bruce's life and wanted to be there for him. And I feel like that was the read I got when he was playing the role. Where, as in other cases, Alfred has felt to me very much like his hand is too much in Bruce's affairs. I didn't feel that way at all. Like, I felt like he just was like, I want to be here for you, and I'm not going to pressure you. Like, yes, you need to do these things to handle your estate, but, like, I'm just going to be here for your needs. Like, my sole purpose is to, like, serve you and be here for you.
Wow.
And I just was like, wow.
What a friend.
I don't know. He just played it really well.
He did. The one negative thing I have that is non-spoiler, so I'll just say, is I do feel like compared to other Batman movies that I really like, I didn't get as much of a sense of Gotham in this one. If they use like indoor locations or the same location over and sure. over a lot. Because I really do like in the beginning, they show a lot of like
the stuff, city, yeah.
a lot of Gotham, you know, but then they never really do that again. So
yeah.
and I do think that I really would like to see more of Gotham, which to not spoil anything, but it might be hard to do that in the sequel. But I would like to see more of Gotham. And I think that that was like my main non-spoiler thing. Or I was like, I just would like a little bit more of a sense
yeah,
of the city
I think
and like
they
the
did,
vastness.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think they did really establish Gotham well. But I also, I would agree with that. Because really like... you're getting some driving scenes through the city, but that doesn't showcase a lot. And then there's maybe like a couple like wide shots where they're standing on a building, like, and the city is behind them.
Right. Well, because you think of like the Nolan films or even the Burton films, and a lot of stuff happens like in the streets of Gotham and there. I'm thinking even like Dark Knight Rises, where it's like the stock market scene. I don't know. There's just like, there wasn't a lot of that, which is because it's more of a detective movie, yeah. so it is more like location based. But like I said, in the future ones, maybe I'd like to see a little bit more of that. Okay, is that? I think that's all I have, like for
yeah.
non spoilers.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's go to a quick ad break. Then we'll be back with spoilers for the Batman.
And we're back to chat spoilers about the Batman.
Oh, man. So if you haven't seen this, definitely do not listen to this section unless you don't care. Interestingly, I feel like there's less to spoil about this movie than other like superhero movies, I feel like, you know?
Yeah,
cause, like,
I would agree.
Like, because I feel like even if you know the outcome, it's still... a good like worthwhile to watch and you can still get stuff. So it's definitely not like a big like, oh my gosh, Batman was really evil the entire time. But yeah, it's there's just like some things that maybe some people might not want to know before they go. So I don't know, what do we want to talk about first?
I'll talk about the Riddler since I brought it up.
Cool. Gotta love the Riddler.
Yeah, one thing that it was so interesting to me about him. And, like, I think part of him is non-threatening because you're like, this guy isn't really out to get me because I am a little person.
Yeah, right.
He's out to take down the establishment. But I think that once you take Riddler and you he empowers other people
yes.
who are not
wow.
him, that's where he gets really scary. Because I don't think he would ever harm a civilian. But you don't ever know what people in the fringe are going to do. And so when you utilize, which I feel like is something that we see a lot, not to throw our politics in the United States into this, but when the insurrection happened, a lot of that was, you know, orchestrated by people who aren't like the Riddler, but are like the Riddler in the sense that they use social media to establish these fringe groups, spread theories, get people excited about their ideas, and then those people feel the need to take on that sort of guise and carry guns around and bring down the establishment on their own. And that is yeah. what is terrifying to me. When it got into that, I was like, oh my God, this group
it's
of crazies.
Really scary.
And they're all dressed up like the Riddler, and they're just shooting people willy-nilly, and this is not...
Yeah.
Like, I know that he wanted to take down the city, but I don't know that this... Like, he wanted chaos, but I don't know that the Riddler wanted this. Like, I do think that the Riddler is a very evil person.
Kayla for the Riddler.
Hey, look, he has some good ideas. Like, I'm all for exposing...
I wouldn't kill people... But I would bring people
like,
into the light metaphorically.
I am anti-murder, even of bad politicians. Anti-murder. But I think the idea that you can sympathize with the Riddler is that he wants the truth to be exposed. And you think that is when you do have these corrupt people in power, corrupt police officers, corrupt politicians who are taking money away from people who deserve the money, who are poor or, you know, marginalized groups, and they're not getting the money that they deserve, and all these people are greedy and stealing it. Like, you want those lies exposed. And I'm like, yes, expose all the lies. But I'm also like, we don't need to be, like, feeding people to rats, I guess, as well.
Right. No, I think it's a very similar comparison to the Joker in The Dark Knight, how they handle that character, and how it's like him and Batman are very much the same. Like, they're very similar people, and it's like Batman's journey in the movie is to just figure out what sets him apart from the Riddler, you know? Because obviously, like, he is also very against all of this corruption that's going on and wants to take it down. But his journey is to, like, basically reject the nihilism and that the Riddler is putting forth. Which is, like, I think also kind of reflected in Catwoman, who she's definitely more less of, like, the anarchy and more just the nihilistic viewpoint. And, like, him figuring out how to have hope in a hopeless situation. And, like, do good without, like, killing or what the Riddler is doing. So, like, it really does work with the story, too, which is, I think that's really the main message of the story. It's, like, how do you have hope for a society that seems doomed, you know, which is a very pertinent
message. Yeah, I was going to say, it's very relevant. I felt that way a lot when you're watching it. Maybe some people would say it's too on the nose. I thought it was good.
No, I thought it was perfect.
I think, too, when you have a black woman who's being elected as mayor and she wants what's best for the people and she's going up against someone, and the only reason she was able to win was because the Riddler killed the mayor.
Right, exactly. Because she would have lost, for
sure. She would have lost because they had all their little thingies in it. And so, I don't know, like, it just is, I think it's a really powerful, you know, maybe subtextual a little bit, but message of her wanting hope and her even going up and addressing Bruce Wayne and being like, I really do want you to be involved in, like, making Gotham a better place, where he is then, you know, I think even from that moment, the gears start turning in his head where he's like, I thought I was making Gotham a better place, but realizing maybe that the Batman, yes, is a way to do that, but maybe Bruce Wayne can also do that. And sort of how that transforms his character, I think through the character of that new mayor-elect. But also, like you said, in the end, where he really has to reconcile what is going on and find hope in that, which I think he comes to that at the end, where obviously, in terms of lighting, too, it shifts from all these red and dark gritty tones to being very light. And yellow and bright, that sort of in his mind he's had, I don't know, this shift. So I'm excited to see what they do with that in the sequels to really develop Batman and Bruce.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have criticized this movie for saying, like, it doesn't show enough of Bruce Wayne, which, like, did they watch the movie? Because that's definitely the point of the movie.
We got, like, a lot of Bruce Wayne. And, like, I also think this is one of the only Batman movies that I've seen that you can tell Bruce, like, knowing Bruce Wayne, you can tell that he's Batman. Because I feel like in a lot of the other Batman movies, Batman become, I mean, yes, he is someone else, maybe he's a truer form, but I think when Riddler said, like, this is the truest form of yourself that I'm looking at, I think that's true. But I also think that in the moment with the kid, paralleling the moment at the funeral or the memorial service with the kid, from when he saw the kid the first time and they sort of, like, had a connection, you can tell that Bruce Wayne is Batman. And I think that really the whole movie you are getting Bruce Wayne, and that when you're seeing Bruce Wayne, you're also seeing Batman, Like, they're not in this two separate entities. Like, they're so entwined together that you can see the both of them transforming throughout the movie. Like, so I don't get that at all, because I'm like, this is the most I have ever seen Bruce Wayne and Batman and, like, actually seeing the two characters, like, melded together.
Yeah, well, and I think it's, like, he doesn't know, like, who he is yet. Like, the whole movie, we don't have this version of Bruce Wayne at all in the Nolan movies. Because you have the moment where you meet him in jail. Basically, like, all the stuff before that is him deciding who he is. We don't see that. So this is, like, not an arc that we've really seen for him.
Yeah.
Because most movies he comes fully formed, like, knowing, oh, I don't know. Like, it just is not what people would expect, I guess.
Yeah, and you can tell that when he has the scenes with Alfred, where Alfred, you know, is talking to him about, like, are you sure that this is, like, what you want? Like, you have to be Bruce, too. Where you can see that he's kind of working through these different things, where he has this routine where at night he is doing all this stuff, and, like, he's trying to figure out where he stands in the world as Batman and as Bruce.
Right.
Which is really cool. It's a very cool look into his world, and I think a very, like, unique take on Bruce.
Yeah, yeah. And you can tell in the beginning, the whole I Am Vengeance thing is very on the nose. But, like, he's not in it to be a symbol of hope for Gotham. I think it's really telling in the early opening scene, his first fight scene, that he technically saves the old man, but, like, he doesn't, like, help him at all. He just leaves him there. Like, he beats up all the bad guys, but, like, it doesn't seem like it's for him. It's mostly just, like, because he's angry.
Yeah.
And I think his whole arc is, like, at the end with the flare, like, figuring out how to become a symbol of, like, be something more, like he says, for Gotham.
Yeah, be for the people, not just for the image, I guess.
Right, for the image, and also just, like, as an extension of, like, him, his rage, you know, because he has all this anger. Yeah. And, like, how to channel that anger.
Well, into, which, like, a positive definitely force. Like, I've reread the opening monologue. I haven't reread his final journal entry monologue. I'd like to compare them side by side. But in that opening one, you know, it's very much like, I am the shadows. Like, they fear me. And it's more about, like, the bad guys fearing him than it is about the people seeing him as their help and their kind of savior. So I don't remember the closing monologue off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and, like, look it up or something.
But I'm
imagining
that
it's,
like,
a shift between the two. Like, I remember it being a shift, but without comparing the two of them.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, a lot more hopeful, and it parallels his journey. Like, you can see the progress he's made, I guess. A couple other things I wanted to... We can talk a little about the Joker reveal. This is the scene that people have said could have been cut. And then he's kind of countered by saying he did cut it, and he decided to put it back in because it makes the scene at the end with Catwoman saying, like, the city's never going to change, more powerful.
Okay.
Because you've just seen, like, even though Gotham was, like, you saw them come together more at the end with, like, the mayor's speech, but then it cuts right into the Joker and him. So it's, like, it's obviously evil is still, like, lurking in Gotham, you know? So less to set up him as a movie, like, as a future tease, and more, like, just Gotham is still messed up.
Yeah, and some of the things that I've seen about that today is that, like, we're so trained to see this as an end credits sequence to, like, be building for something else. So you watch it and you're like, ooh, this is it. This is setting up the Joker for the next movie. And it's like, I don't think that was his intention with this scene. I definitely think it's like you said, where it's just establishing that evil still lurks. Obviously, the Joker will eventually come into this franchise. I don't know that it'll necessarily even be in the next movie, I do think that obviously he is introducing Joker, and there's a lot of interesting things packed up into that, that Batman and Joker have already crossed paths at some point, and how did that happen, and what happened? There's a lot of questions, but I do think it's interesting that it was not an end credit sequence, because it feels like an end credit sequence, but it's only because we are so mentally prepared for that to be an end credits sequence, that when it's in the real edit, you're like, this feels a little off. But I think if we weren't mentally like trained to have those end credits sequences that are a big reveal Marvel style, it wouldn't have felt as off as it did, I guess, to me.
Yeah, I'm just really glad they didn't have end credits sequences.
Oh, I'm glad. They had the thing or whatever that leads to the thing.
Yeah, I don't know if I count that with like the little typing. Yeah, that's not. Because I do feel like a different editor might have. I mean, the last Catwoman scene is pretty important, but I think a different editor or filmmaker might have decided, why don't we put the Joker scene last, you know, at the end credits, and make the Catwoman scene the mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
I think a different film, that could have happened. And I'm just really glad that it's part of the
edit. I am also glad, because I had to go to the bathroom so bad that I didn't even stay for whatever the Riddler thing was that popped up.
Yeah, I didn't stay either. I just looked it up and I was like,
Great, it's done. I don't have to wait for anything and just like scurried out of the theater, which was a major W for me. If I'm going to be sitting there for that long, like I don't necessarily want to sit through the credits and wait for something else. Like that's just not a reward to me anymore. So...
No, it just seems like a chore. Like, okay, I know there's more, so now I just have to sit here, I guess, and wait. Yeah, I am really done with end credit scenes. Like, 100% done with that.
For me, one thing that I didn't really like as much, maybe if I watched it again, I would like it better. I thought the ending was good. But the water thing just kind of lost me a little bit.
Well, because they would have died. Because electricity... Once electricity hits water,
well, the electricity didn't hit the water. That was, I don't know.
Well, no, but like any electricity, like, because it hit the stage and the stage had electricity running through it. I just think like it definitely would have been electrocuted. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But whatever.
And I also just like, I wasn't even thinking along those lines. I was just
thinking
like,
of electricity and water. I don't know.
Well, I definitely thought that when they were like right before he swung down on the cable. But no, I just thought like, I thought we had like, I understand why they did that because they're tearing down Gotham and all that. To me, like, I was fine with the climax being the scene with him. And obviously there needed to be more that Riddler had this bigger plan, which I definitely understand. I just, the water just kind of lost me a little bit. Like when it was like, oh, we're breaking down the seawall and now all this water's coming in. I just, that was a lot for me, because that was the kind of the only thing for me that didn't feel as grounded in the universe, because so far everything up to that point was like, I am buying all of this. I'm bought all in. You have all my chips. But then when that happened, I just kind of was like, I don't know. It was harder to believe because we had all these real stakes in the world that I just was like, okay, all this water is coming in and now it feels a little bit bigger. Maybe more something that wasn't in tune with this movie. But that was like literally the only thing that I kind of had problems with. But I also was like, I understand what you're doing. I get it. I do. I would not have gone this route. Maybe you could have done something else, like blow up certain sectors of the city and lose power to the whole city. Like all the power grids are down.
Yeah, some dark fights in the dark, man.
Yeah, just something that wasn't water-based. Like, the water-based just threw me off completely. I wasn't a fan. But, yeah, everything else. Like, I thought the fight sequences were fine in the end. I thought everything else in the climax was fine with, like, the mayor getting shot.
I think the shooting thing, like you said, was really... Like, that was a great raising of the stakes, having them there.
Yeah.
I liked the water. I think it definitely felt like a big jump in stakes. When he was like, oh, and now all the I'm gonna blow up all the edges of the city.
Like, I liked the stake. I liked raising the stakes. It just was like,
you have to raise the stakes. It just felt like a really big jump.
The water,
in the raising
I
of the
just
stakes.
The logistics of it, just in my brain, I'm like, all right, you have all, like, is this taking down the whole city? Like, are all these people fitting in this stupid little thing? Like, why are people?
Well, I
going
think that's
here?
The point that they can't fit.
No,
in that
I know. But it just is like, it all happened so fast, and it felt like the city wasn't actually that big because everything kind of just got centered in this, like, stadium.
Right, yeah. Which I think is an issue with, like I said, the city doesn't feel like, yeah. I don't have a big, good enough grasp of the city.
So I think that was more my problem. Like, it wasn't necessarily, like, the issue of the water in general. It was just more, like, logistically, I was having, like, it happened so quickly. Maybe this is where they cut stuff out. Maybe this is the, and that is where my brain is just, like, not comprehending. I just felt like it happened so fast. Like, it was like, oh, we're going to blow stuff up. And then it was like, oh my gosh, we're here and we're hanging from the rafters and the electricity's falling and all these people are trapped. Like, it just happened so fast that I was really not soaking in, almost like a flood, what was actually happening. Like, my brain wasn't given enough time to, like, process what the Riddler was doing and how those stakes were being raised. But that was, like, really one of the only complaints I had was just in that moment. I was like, I'm a little bit confused. Don't really understand how this works.
Yeah, I think this, like, the scene works in itself. I think maybe how they get to the scene could have used some work. I personally, like, it did enough for me where, like, I was like, okay, this is cool. I think it's, I know people have been saying it's very similar to Batman Begins, but, like, I mean, it's Batman. They're all from Batman comics. Batman comics are going to repeat themselves eventually. And I do think that it does work, like, because it's obviously that they're taking it seriously, because I think a lot of superhero movies in the past have, like, given these big, like, oh my gosh, the world's gonna end, and then it just, like, goes away in 20 minutes, and it's like, oh, okay, so I guess that wasn't that big of a deal, that, and, like, it was a very easily fixable issue. But I do like how it seems like they're gonna keep this as a thing, where, like, they have to still deal with the flood in the future, which is, like, a very cool, like, technically Batman saved the day, but also it's not completely fine because the city is completely flooded. So I do like how it's, like, I don't know, it seemed like they really committed to it, at least, and it's, like, a very big story center.
One thing that I, going off of that, I'm excited about is, like, we never, all of a sudden, the city is magically fine in Avengers. Like, they destroy half the city, but then a year or two later, the city is fine. Not in America, excuse me. Have you seen how long construction takes in America?
I know, right, jeez.
No, but, like, I think it'll be really cool to see the aftermath of this. Like, that's not a look we really get to see a lot in these blockbusters, of them actually rebuilding the city from something that happened. I think it's something they tried to do with the aftermath of the blip in Endgame.
Yeah.
But I don't think they did it well, but I think in this, them
they could do it well.
Rebuilding the city is a very cool perspective because, you know, like, Penguin and stuff, which we'll get branches off of, but, like, he wants to seize the assets and there's all these other people who want their hands on the money. And so I think it's just going to be really cool to see where this all leads.
Right. And, you know we're getting some Penguin submarine action now.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's got to happen.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be cool. Yeah, the future, I think it's pretty much guaranteed now that these are going to get sequels because it wasn't, I don't even know, it's still technically not, like, announced. But I think, like, he said he wants to do them if they're going to do more. And I think, like, at this point, they're going to do more because it's done very well, gotten good reviews. So I think it's pretty much guaranteed that they're going to be doing more movies in this series. And they're doing, similar with Suicide Squad, some spinoff shows on HBO Max.
Yeah.
So the Gotham City Police Department series, a Penguin series, and an Arkham Asylum series.
Very excited. Yeah, it's great. And just, like, to briefly talk about the Penguin really quick, I laughed out loud when he waddled, when, like, he was
so
tied
funny.
Up and he went, doo, 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 doo. I laughed out loud. I also don't understand why people are saying this movie isn't funny and campy, because I think there are definitely
very funny
bits that reminded me of the 60s Batman, because I just watched that, which is, like, so stupid. And, you know, they're, like, they have the...
Well, the riddles. Like, the riddles are, like,
the silly and make no sense. But I loved one thing particularly where, like, in the 60s Batman, where they're, like, this riddle, oh, a banana. Like, it just is, like, the stupidest things. And I thought that was, like, very true when he was like, oh, ha, 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 a thumb drive. Because yeah, it's a thumb in the car. I was like, ah, it's, like, the original. Like, it just reminded me of that. And I don't understand why people are like, oh, it's not funny. It's not, like, the humor of Batman, blah, 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 blah. Because I was like, it is. What are you talking about, Dumbo? Like
when a movie can take itself seriously and still be funny. Sometimes that's why a movie's funny.
Well, when it takes itself seriously, that's what's funny. She's like, what's under the mask? Are you seriously scarred? And he's just like, yeah.
Yes.
He's like,
it's so funny.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
What was the other?
You have a lot of cats.
That's funny too. What was the other
the Spanish one where it's like
you
guys don't know the difference between L
and he's
law.
Like, well, and I love that too because that happens a lot in the 1960s Batman too, where they just say something and then they're like, oh wait, we have to go back. It's this, not what we thought. Which was very much like he was like, oh duh, like we just did this whole thing. URL. It's a website. And you're like, oh ha ha ha, duh.
Oh, I got it.
I think it's funny in its own way, which I really appreciate because I think again, people are trained to have these stupid Marvel jokes. That just
Scooby-Doo.
Are not funny. Yeah, like Scooby-Doo this shit, man. like it's so dumb. And so I don't know. I just was it felt very grounded in that way too, that like the humor actually made sense and it wasn't just thrown in there for laughs, which I feel like a lot of other blockbusters do.
Definitely. Great point. Yeah.
Major
like,
win. Basically
natural.
Matt Reeves is a genius.
He is.
That's
he
all
is.
I've got
I
to
can't
say.
I'm so glad he directed
this. I will
this.
Boycott if he doesn't do
oh
the
my
sequels.
Gosh. If
I
he
will
is
be
just
so
a producer
mad.
On the sequel, like if he just gets a producing credit.
I don't care what else he has going on in his life. I need him to make the sequels. I need it all to be him. I want him to have all creative control. You know,
please.
I need it.
Maybe Ben Affleck will direct it. The one thing I wanted to bring up that was spoiler that was the one thing that like I didn't click with was I think it does a very good job generally of not making it feel like, all right, let's go to this place and like, oh, we thought it was this thing, but it's this thing. You know, like how sometimes I feel like movies with like clues can do that where like, oh wait, so everything we just did like was kind of worthless, I guess, you know? I don't know. I just think sometimes it can feel like a little too back and forth. I think it did a very good job in this not feeling like that. The one thing I think maybe even could have been cut was when he has the big Bruce Wayne, like, my parents were actually me evil or reveal,
sure.
You know? Because here, the scenes go, you see, he sees the TV, and it's the Riddler's video, and he reveals all this shit. And then he goes to Falcone, and he's like, is this true? And Falcone's like, yes, it's true. And then you have this big reveal like, wow, it's true. And then he goes to Alfred and he's like, Alfred, is this true? And Alfred's like, no, this is true. And Bruce Wayne's like, wow, I was wrong. It just felt like, I don't know. It felt like it was like the same scene twice where he asked the same questions to Falcone, which basically I don't even know if he needed to ask because it was just the same thing. He just confirmed what Riddler said, you know, on TV. I think he really could have gotten that from the TV. And then maybe he goes to Alfred and he's just like, you lied to me. You know, I just think that was the one time where I was like, okay, so this feels like this is the same scene twice and like a very quick turnaround where like, he's like, oh, my parents are evil. Actually, no, they're not anymore. I'm fine. I don't know. So that was my main thing that was spoiler related. But overall, it's a very good movie, which I think should lead us right into our quick ranking of our top three Batman movies.
Wow. Amazing.
Which I obviously haven't seen every single Batman, like every single animated movie that they've done. I tried to watch, I watched The Mask of the Phantasm because that's a big one.
I watched that as well.
I watched the 60s Batman and I started Batman Forever. I fell asleep. So, Batman and Robin, like, I don't think, I'm pretty safe to say that I will not
yeah,
like,
I
don't
watched,
think that's going to make the top
10. I watched Phantasm. I rewatched the original Batman because I hadn't seen that since I was a kid.
I did too. The Burton one?
No, no,
right?
No. Sorry, oh, no. Sorry. The 60s Batman.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because
yeah,
I hadn't seen that since I was little. And right. I watched Batman and Scooby-Doo.
Wow.
Where Batman features
just in case. You never know.
I loved it. And then I was going to watch the Burton sequel, Batman Returns. But I didn't get around to it in time.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, not to like give away anything, but I would definitely like to see The Dark Knight again after seeing this, because I did actually just rewatch all the Nolan movies last year.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, like now that I have this fresh in my mind, it might be good to see The Dark Knight again, because that's the good one in my opinion. I think the other two are good, but like not great.
I will never rewatch Batman Begins because that movie terrifies me out of my mind.
Yeah, that's why we're never doing a Christopher Nolan Batman episode.
No, because I can't do it. I'll skip it, and I remember it enough in my head, but like I'll watch whatever else. But Batman Begins, I refuse to watch. That is like,
maybe we could do like, you know, one of those VidAngel things where like
it cuts out all the shots of the scarecrow.
Maybe we could get them to do that,
or maybe someone just like give me all the timestamps that the scarecrow guy is on screen, like with his mask. And he's like, and it's like fuzzy and...
What's funny is that like, because I knew that when I rewatched it, and I like watched it in mind, like how many of these scenes are there? And there's only like, it's probably like 15 seconds combined. Because like it just shows it for a second and it's like done. Because it's only like their hallucinations.
Oh God, he looks it is like so scary. I don't know why. I could not tell you. My body just has a visceral reaction to it. I can't. I saw I saw a GIF of it recently, and I almost threw up when I saw the GIF of it, like, on my phone. It, like, my reaction is that strong.
That's a weird GIF to post. I don't know. But let's just go through our top three. We can just run through them. We don't have to go back and forth, because I'm not going to say too much.
Sure.
But number, I'm just starting at the bottom, go to the top, from the bottom to the top. My number three is Batman Returns, the Tim Burton one. This one is a very good movie. I would highly recommend it. I don't really love the first Tim Burton Batman, and I think this one fixes a lot of its problems, except for the fact that I still do not like Keaton as Batman. I think he's terrible. And maybe it's more just like, I don't think they maybe even just give him anything to do. So he's just always the least interesting part of both of the movies that he's in. But I really love the Penguin, and really the first two acts of this movie. I think the third act is where it kind of falls apart a little bit, which is why it's third. I think if this movie was like, had a great third act, it might be first. Like, I really do love the first two acts of this one. And it has maybe my favorite Gotham atmosphere. Number two, I'm just going to combine, like, number two and number one, because right now I do have still The Dark Knight at number one, and then the Batman at number two. But it's hard. I definitely want to watch The Dark Knight again with this one in mind. And at the moment, it's really in first just because, like, mostly nostalgia, because, like, it's a very, like I kind of said at the beginning, a very big movie for me. And I do think it's very good, but I do think it has issues. Like, I think it's a four-act movie where it has a very good three-act structure, and then the last 40 minutes is just, like, another act. And it's, like, I think that's the biggest issue, where, like, they really could have cut the last 40 minutes of that movie, and it would have been good. It's not unbeatable for me. So I do think that The Batman has a very good chance of overtaking it if I rewatch it and reconsider. But for now, I haven't rewatched it for this. So that's my ranking.
Great.
Yeah. That's it.
Cool. So it's been a while since I've revisited the Nolan trilogy. Probably like multiple years. I don't think I watched it since before I went to college. So it's been a long time, but
I really wish you could watch Batman Begins, because that'd be such an interesting to find a timestamp.
Yeah, if you watch it before me, if we do an episode and you watch it before me, then you can just mark the timestamp so I know when to close my eyes for Scarecrow.
Is it only like the hallucinations?
It's only the hallucinations.
Okay, so I'll mark the hallucinations on the timestamp.
But like, I steer clear of the whole movie just because of that. Like,
right.
I don't know what it is.
Maybe if I had an editing software, I would just put it in there and I would just send it to you.
Oh my God.
With those scenes cut out.
It's so bad. So
anyway,
I'll say for me, I would have The Dark Knight at three. I do really like The Dark Knight and everything I remember about it. It's always been my favorite of the three. I haven't seen a better Batman movie. I haven't seen Batman Returns, so I don't know what I would think of that one, but based on the other ones.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what you'd think of Batman Returns.
Because I don't mind the Batman, Burton's first Batman. We watched it when we did our Burton episode. I watched it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was
good. You should definitely watch it. It's like,
so I like it. I think actually, you would really like it. Like, I mean, that one I thought about putting here in my third, the first one.
Right.
Because I did like that one. But I don't know. I like The Dark Knight. It's good. And then my second one is Batman from the 60s, which is just my 60s. Kind of movie. It is so funny. I watched it the other day. I was dying. I was laughing so hard. It's all the campiness I need. It reminded me of like how much I loved Robin when I was in high school. Like I was obsessed with Robin. So that one, when I revisited, I was like, oh man, I need to like dress up as Robin for Halloween this year again. That was the thought I had when watching this.
Maybe I can be Batman.
Oh my gosh. Could you? And I'll be Robin. Would you do it?
If they have I would be Batman, especially imagine if they have like a specific Robert Pattinson costume do the makeup under the eyes. Wow.
Yeah, and I could do like a grittier version of Robin. Like I'm sure I could figure out.
And I'll have like a dual costume where once when I take off the costume, I'll be in the Bruce Wayne outfit he's in when he puts the sunglasses on and stuff.
That's a great
outfit too. Wow. That's like probably the best outfit in the movie.
Yeah. Wow, it was good. And then my number one is the Batman, obviously.
The Batman.
The Batman. I loved it. I thought it was great. I definitely want to see it again. It's my number one. I'm definitely like, it's going to be my hyperfixation for the next month for sure.
It already is.
Yeah. If you follow
when
me
you
on
change
Twitter.
Your Twitter name, that is a sign that the tides are turning.
I have a problem. I hyperfixate on things. I just do. And
hey, sometimes you got to hyperfixate to unfixate on other things.
Yep. That's how I roll my whole life. So this is my current hyperfixation.
The Batman.
The Batman.
I wonder if the next one will be called like A Batman.
Yeah. I wonder what the next one will be called because like, okay. So did you see the whole thing with the website? Are you up on?
Yeah,
up on
the,
it?
Yeah, the ratatatatat.
The ratatata. Not the Pokemon, but
not the Pokemon guys. The URL.
The ratalada. .com.
Yeah,
I did not participate in the website, but I did read.
Same. I didn't even know it was a thing.
Yeah, so I read an article. So basically, what it does is it takes you to the website. It gives you three riddles to solve. You solve the riddles, it gives you a video, you watch the video, which was the Riddler's video about Thomas Wayne, and it's like a 45-second video, I watched it, and it emphasizes the word hush, and so people are taking that as Hush, the villain from the comics, will be, I mean, it also fits in with the lies and all that.
Right, yeah.
So people are taking that as a tease that Hush will be the villain in the sequel.
Interesting.
So I got all
don't
up on the
know. Don't know who Hush is, but
he's like
sounds good.
He has like a mummy face. I don't know. Okay. Like his face is torn up. He's like a cyborg or something. I don't know. I only saw pictures today.
as long as it's not Scarecrow, because then we could not review.
But people
the next
think I saw rumors that. Oscar Isaac is supposed to play Hush today.
Yeah, I heard he was in talks for this movie, and then maybe like they were like, let's do this for the next one.
Yeah. So Hush,
very interesting.
I don't know anything about him, but when I looked up a picture, he looked interesting. Like kind of scary. He's got some guns, and he's got like a thing over
a
his
mask.
Face. Yeah, like he had like a burn, or is like a cyborg or something.
He's hideously scarred.
Yes. So then he has like mummy tape on his face.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see. Be cool.
Okay, so that's the episode for the week, which brings us to our question of the week, which is, what is your favorite Batman movie? So maybe it's 1960s Batman, or maybe it's Batman and Robin. I don't know.
Maybe you
like that one.
I like a fellow Robin fan.
Yeah, so let us know on any of our social medias, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can also reach out to us on our website, our email. It's all in the show notes.
Answer it in the Q&A on Spotify.
Any way you want it, that's the way you got need it. And our next episode is going to be a review of the new Pixar movie Turning Red.
Wow.
Which means we will also be updating our Pixar rankings, which we always do when a new Pixar movie comes
out.
And
my Pixar rankings have changed since last time because Luca has moved higher up the list. So I'll be excited to see
what that's all about.
Yeah.
Next time. Very interesting. I'm excited for it. Like, the trailers look interesting. You know, like, I think that it's going to be good. And it's going to be hopefully, like Luca, maybe a nice change of pace kind of movie.
It seems that way. Definitely from the clips that have come out in the past couple weeks.
Yeah. Cool. Make sure to leave us a review on both Apple Podcasts and Spotify, depending on where you're listening.
Yeah, hit us with the reviews. 5 stars.
Give us that 5-star review.
This is like the Riddler. The Riddler.
Vengeance will come for you.
The Riddler with his Twitch streamers.
We should have done the question of the week as like a riddle.
Ooh.
But I'm not a riddle guy. I can't come up with riddles or solve them.
I can sometimes solve a riddle.
Let me tell you. Because I watched the Batman 1960 and this one. Every time a riddle came up, I was like, I have no idea what this is.
Okay, but the riddles in the Batman 1960 one are like
that's a banana pencil.
Yeah. Who was ever going to answer a banana pencil besides fucking Robin? Like,
classic Robin move with the banana pencil. Yeah. Okay, we probably should wrap this up. So
yeah,
anything
please.
Else you have to say? Before we head out of here.
No. Batman unite. Robin unite. Mm. I petition to Matt Reeves to bring Robin into this Batman universe and to cast someone I love as Robin, please.
Maybe we should make a change.org petition for that one. All right. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, I'm Vengeance.
And I am the Shadows.
And we're your second hand.